All right, we're getting our 1965 on.
Yeah, I kind of feel like we should drop the top and head to the local diner. No, the drive-thru. That's what I'm trying to think of.
See, I like this.
Get served hot dogs on roller skates.
Yeah, this is good stuff.
I'm into it.
A little Smokey Robinson. The Miracles. All right, it's the morning show presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System. This is from 1965, since we're 65 days away from the college football season, or excuse me, from Georgia, 63 days from week zero will be on Saturday. I keep wanting to say Thursday.
We're in the 50s, Dave. We're 59 days away from week zero.
How about that?
59 days. But we're 66, as you mentioned, from Georgia taking the wind out of the Vanderbilt sails and saying, hey, you're still not a football school.
Yeah, so, wow, we're in the 50s now for week zero. Love it. Love it. All right. It's time to bring in our man, Bill Shanks. Who let the dogs out, Bill?
You know they're going to bark when you call, David.
I love them.
On schedule.
What are their names again?
Ricky, Lucy, Susie, and Tommy John.
I love. So you got four of them. I've got
four of them.
I did not know that Bill had a dog named Tommy John. That is my favorite fact ever now.
It's a long story in that. I'll make it quick. I almost got a dog about 9 years ago who had a bad elbow, and he was kind of pitiful. and
this is awesome, by the way. This is awesome.
Well, and I was going to get him because he was, bless his heart, I hope he's alive somewhere. He was the sweetest dog, but he had a bad arm. And when I called back the next day, I had just lost a dog. So, you know, when you just lose a dog, you're heartbroken and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And you just don't know, and you go back and forth. But when I saw him, and oh, my gosh, it was pitiful. And I'm like, I'm going to get him, and I'm going to call him Tommy John because he's got a bad arm. And then so they called back, and I called back, and they said someone else got him, and my heart was broken. And so when this little boy came to me about 3 years ago, he didn't have a bad arm, but he just looked like a Tommy. And of course, you know, I call him Tommy John, and he looks at me like, why are you calling me two names, you goofball? But he's got a good arm, and he's just Tommy John. So, you know, I hope I never have to give him ulnar collateral ligament surgery anytime in his lifetime. But yeah, they're four great dogs. I love them a lot.
You're a good man. You are a good man. Four dogs and one named Tommy John. I love it. That is not. See, I've already forgotten. What were the other three's names?
Ricky and Lucy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Susie.
That's right, because when you said Ricky and Lucy, I thought you were going to go Fred and Ethel for the other
two. Lucy's a redhead, and so she kind of followed me down the road in Waycross. So I was at my mom's house, and she wouldn't leave me alone, and she was they had people down the street had abandoned her. And then I didn't know she had a brother in the backyard who looks like Snoopy. So I said, well, he's got to be Ricky. I mean, you know, he looks like a dumb banjo player. So I'm going to – bongo player, so I'm going to call him Ricky. So they're great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I guess – and by the way, our man Bill Shanks, host of the Bill Shanks Show – 93.1 FM in Macon, 98.3 FM in Warner Robins, and South Central Georgia, as well as 105.9 FM in Warner Robins. When the Braves are winning, you're not surly, so that always kind of, you know, takes a little bit of the – I'm kidding. Takes a little bit of the fun out of it. I mean, these last two games against the
first-place
Cubs, yeah, have involved the bullpen – being very good, and I'm going to say I love seeing Sean Newcomb coming out of the bullpen. So let's talk a little bit about the bullpen because everybody wants to, and we may see Kimbrel today for the Cubs, which would be kind of weird. But what are your thoughts on the bullpen and where it's progressing, where you think it's going to go?
Well, there's no doubt that the change has been made. And by the way, you know, we're at the halfway point after last night's game, which is incredible. They're on pace for 96 wins. There's no doubt that the metamorphosis, if you will, of the bullpen, David, has just been remarkable. I mean, you think of what this team started with at the beginning of the year with Aroyce Viscano and Johnny Venters and Shane Carl and Jesse Biddle and Chad Sabatka. I mean, Wes Parsons also. Parsons back in AAA. Sabaka's been up and down a couple of times. Biddle got traded. Carl's in AAA. Venner's got released. He's now with Washington. Biscaino got traded after he had, of course, season-ending surgery. And the combination of some of the replacements, like Josh Tomlin, who I just laughed at when they got him in late in spring training because this guy had been a starter for Cleveland for many years as like their fourth or fifth starter, and he got released in spring training by Milwaukee, and the Braves signed him, and he's been an effective, almost utility knife pitcher, if you will, just doing anything they need him to do. Jacob Webb's come up, and after having a very good minor league career and setting himself up for this, has been outstanding. And I want to tell you, I agree with you. The change of Newcomb and Tukey to the bullpen has been a big part of the success of the overall bullpen, where their ERA is third in the National League now, because Newcomb is just a different pitcher when he is coming out of the pen. And I think I'm sure he wishes he was starting because he had a full year last year of it and did well overall. But this guy, he's a reliever. I mean, when you find the kind of command he's got and the aggressiveness he's got in that bullpen, and you add that with Anthony Schwarzak and what he's done, and you know, Jerry Blevins has been okay for the most part. And then, you know, Luke Jackson, while he's going to make all of us alcoholics, he has been somewhat effective, and we never would have thought he would have had 12 saves, and we sure wouldn't have thought he would have had 6 blown saves. But that whole story has made them a much more effective group overall, and I think when they're going to be more changes, like possibly the addition of Kevin Gausman and even maybe the addition of Mike Fultonevich and maybe even a traded player who will be coming in before July 31st, this has a chance to be a really good bullpen.
I've seen you tweet out the numbers, Bill, and I'm not sure what it is today, but the Braves bullpen does in fact rank at like the top 5 in Major League Baseball right now in terms of ERA, which can be a little bit of a tricky stat. But the point of this is, and tell me if I'm kind of thinking the right way here, we as Braves fans love to kind of throw our hands up and be like, oh, our bullpen is, you know, the worst ever. But this is sort of a Major League Baseball mantra right now. We are living in the era of the hitter, and as long as we're scoring runs, which the Braves offense is certainly doing, and kind of taking the onus off the bullpen, this is not just a Braves problem. This is all of Major League Baseball, and we have it a lot better than a lot of folks out there.
Well, there are a couple things going on. There have been some interesting articles written, Logan, in the last couple of days. Number one, there was an article written yesterday that I have not read all of. It was written by a doctor of, like, physics or something like that, and they wrote about the change in the ball itself and how the ball is different this year, the number of home runs that are up, and how the offense is going to put up just spectacular numbers as a sport itself because of the difference in the ball. And that combined with an article that Tom Verducci wrote on SI.com a couple of days ago about how bullpen production is at an all-time low, and the bullpens are just around baseball are horrible. And we've seen that in the National League East, started with the Braves early on, and then they changed, of course, with the personnel changes I referenced. But the Nationals and Phillies and Mets just have horrible bullpens. And that's the customary thing around baseball right now. Mm-hmm. That it's just a horrible. And I think part of the reason is, excuse me, you know, there's more taxing on bullpens these days because the rotation is not doing what it used to do, obviously. The bullpens have to do more work. The bullpens are coming in earlier. The bullpens have to throw more pitchers per game, more pitches per game. Pitchers have to pitch more frequently, and they're wearing out. And a lot of times I think baseball executives have believed that bullpen arms are interchangeable, that, you know, half the people in the Atlanta bullpen right now aren't going to be with them next year anyway, so who cares? Use them until they drop. And so, yeah, there's some almost institutional things going on that are making some of those things happen. And the ironic thing about it is the Atlanta Braves bullpen, which has been much maligned, is kind of rising to the top. Now, look, with all the accolades that it deserves, they still do not have a closer. God bless Luke Jackson for what he has done. But I'm not going to sit here and get all excited about someone who at the midway point of the season has six blown saves.
Right.
This is not – that's not good. There's nothing good about that. I had people on my Twitter account the other day get on me and say, well, he's been unlucky. I don't want to hear about that luck crap.
No, six blown saves is not luck.
Six blown saves is not luck. And he may be lucky sometimes for getting out of the innings once he walks the batter for the first time up.
Well,
so,
could Anthony Swarzak, who I'm having a little man sports crush on him right now, could he be a closer?
Well, maybe, but I don't think he is. You know, I think the dilemma they're in is, okay, yeah, do we give Swarzak a chance to see if he can be effective in that role? Or they're going to have to go get somebody. They're going to have to go get a closer. And I don't know who that's going to be. I mean, there are a lot of candidates out there, I think, as we see more teams through the days fall back and realize they've got to be sellers instead of buyers. And we obviously still have another month left before the trade deadline, and that's going to be a hard deadline this year. So teams are going to have to make a lot of choices. But there are going to be plenty of candidates out there. And we know the guys in San Francisco are going to be out there. Felipe Vasquez is a kid for Pittsburgh who's done very well. Vasquez has like two blown saves in a year and a half. I mean, that's what a closer does, right? Givens with Baltimore, Colome with the White Sox. Cam Bedrosian with the Angels may be available. I mean, there are going to be players who will be available that the Braves can go after, and I think they're just going to have to get a closer, one that is looked at as, okay, he's a closer. You know, I mean, Brad Hand of Cleveland, a lot of people thought leading up the last couple of weeks that Brad Hand would be available. Now the Indians have gotten hot, and they're like tied for the wild card lead. Well, they're not going to trade Brad Hand right now. They fall back, and Brad Hand's someone who you want to go after. So there are going to be candidates out there available. I just still think look, it might be faulty. He might be the closer because – they've got to get another starting pitcher. You know, with Fulte doing what he did on Saturday and then getting sit down and then Teron doing what he did on Monday, I think that convinced me, they got to get another starting pitcher. So when that happens, guess what? Guess who may be out of a job?
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how well he does in AAA, he may not get his job back in Atlanta, and that's Mike Foltynewicz.
So does the Madison Bumgarner talk continue on? What goes on with all of that and also Will Smith?
Well, that talk will continue coming out of my mouth.
Well, I want to ask.
I'm asking.
Yeah.
I watched Madison Bumgarner on Tuesday night after the Braves game was over. They had their game with Colorado on ESPN. I just don't know how anybody can watch that guy and tell me that he's not the best candidate for this team. Again, David, you know, it's going to be hard this year because of that hard trade deadline cap on July 31st, because some of these teams that may be on the front, I mean, look, if they're coming out of the All-Star break and they're five games or less behind in the wild card hunt, they may not want to trade their starting pitcher. And, you know, Matthew Boyd from Detroit is not going to get me excited about having him for the stretch drive and in the playoffs. Tanner Roark from the Reds is not going to make me think, oh, God, we're going to win the World Series. I'm not a big Marcus Stroman fan. I just am not. Madison Bumgarner continues to be my favorite. And again, Cleveland, since they're back in the wild card race, they're not going to trade Trevor Bauer right now, I don't think, with a chance of them going to the wild card, considering they've gotten hot. So it's going to be a tricky market. And of course, the Braves aren't going to be the only team out there that will be going for starting pitchers. So they're going to have to find one, though. Somebody called my show yesterday and made a good point. They said, Bill, you know, even if it's not. And they use this example because I'd been talking about Zach Greinke. I'd love Zach Greinke. I think I love Greinke. I'm a big Greinke fan, so I'd love to have him on this Braves team. I think he'd be an ace pitcher. He's due a lot of money, so that's a very complicated issue, although the Braves have plenty of space after this year to pay him a lot of money because they got $80 million that could come off the books after this season. But they said, you know, it may be a situation where just to get another arm that could eat innings, if they can't count on Gossman or Fulte, they get some Robbie Ray type. And that may have to be the situation at hand. But I still say, David, I mean, Bumgarner, he's still good. I know he's not what he was in 15, but man, I'd take him in a heartbeat.
I know your stance on Bumgarner, and I think a lot of folks agree with that he is the best option. But realistically, do you think it's going to happen?
Well, the problem is they won't position player prospects, and they don't need a catcher. They've got Buster. They've got Joey Bart right behind him. Two of the Braves' top four prospects are catchers. As much as I feel like if they got Madison Bumgarner and Will Smith today, the Braves would be one of the favorites to win the World Series. I would not trade Drew Waters or Christian Pache.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I know I've said this before on here, and I've said it on social media. I think that'd be very difficult to do, to gamble giving up a player, either one of them, who is looked at as a potential all-star, who at 20 years old, they're both tearing up the Southern League. And so here's the thing, Logan. I think the Giants are crazy if they don't look to Atlanta. If Atlanta says, look, I'm not trading you Drew Waters and Christian Pache in a trade, end of story. I think the Giants are still crazy if they don't pick Atlanta's farm system apart to get players for those two rentals. So when push comes to shove in late July, and of course Bumgarner's kind of controlling this to a certain extent too, I'm still hopeful that there will be some combination of talented players that they could come to an agreement on to make a trade. I'm still trying to hold out hope for that. But I think if they would have given up Drew Waters, Bumgarner and Smith would have been here yesterday.
Hey, the Braves are headed to New York this weekend to take on the Mets, and their implosion right now is interesting to watch. What were your thoughts? You know, because someone was asking me, it's like, what is it like in these? Because I don't go over to the Braves very often, and you do go over there a lot. But like when Mickey Callaway goes off on a reporter, and then one of the pitchers, you know, wants to fight the guy, and they get in they have to restrain him. What the heck is going on there, and how does that even, you know, get to that point to where it's happening like that?
Well, they just don't have the type of organization that controls things like that, nips in the bud before it even happens, if that makes sense. I mean, people make fun of the Braves' way and the way things are handled and done in that locker room that is not really – due to ownership, it's almost due to legacy, it's almost due to how it's been handled,
yeah.
and history, and you know Brian Snitker obviously is a Bobby Cox disciple, so we had a Mets guest. I have a guy who works in New York for Gotham Baseball who comes on my show occasionally. He's a weird dude in that he's a Mets fan and as a Falcons fan too, so that's the only reason I like him a little bit.
Oh, it's not the Falcoholic.
No, he's not a Falcoholic, but no, he's a really good guy, and we had him on the other day, and he brought this up. He said, you know, this would never happen in Atlanta because Brian Snitker is like Bobby Cox, and they do handle things differently, and you just don't see turmoil and drama in Atlanta like you do in New York. And he, of course, is blaming the Wilpons for, look, they brought in a manager, David, who was a pitching coach who had never managed in his life. They then turned around a year later and hired a sports agent to be their general manager. That ought to tell you everything you need to know. I mean, you can't do that in New York.
Yeah.
It's just, that's moronic isn't it?
I get it. The media up there, it's obviously the harshest media in the world. I mean,
right.
I understand that, too. So it is a little bit different. Atlanta and New York, it's completely different. But, man,
certainly.
It's just interesting to watch. And it's funny, too, because between the Nationals, the Phillies, and the Mets, which manager of those three teams do you think will be gone first?
Well, I was going to say Callaway, but they keep on talking about how Wilpon is protecting him no matter what.
Yeah.
Which is just stupid. Dave Martinez, I almost felt sorry for him the other day watching that team because it's not his fault the bullpen is that awful.
Yeah.
His bullpen ERA is like 7.5. I mean, to the point where they're bringing Johnny Venters in, and I love Johnny Venters, but come on. And then Kapler, I mean, we know he's just kind of a dumpster fire in his own shell.
I know. It's crazy.
I don't think any of those managers Mattingly will probably walk away and get tired of losing after a while. I don't know if any of those managers will be in place beginning of next year. I mean, Brian Snicker may be the old man in the division by the time 2020 rolls around. Because they'll want a scapegoat in Philadelphia after spending all that money. We know they will. You know, that's the thing. They brought in all these players and spent a fortune. And then if that 32-year-old general manager is not going to go anywhere, guess who's going to get the chopping block? And which I don't like that. I mean, I want them to keep that goofball as long as they can because I don't think he helps them very much. And, you know, they'll bring in a Joe – one of those three teams will bring in a Joe Girardi, and they'll have a real manager. But, you know, this circus about how the GM's calling down to the dugout to get Callaway to take out DeGrom and stuff like that. I mean, it's just incredible of what the stories are there. But I don't see how any of those people survive. To be honest with you, I think they'll all be gone at some point soon.
It's a weird. I mean, it's kind of a weird thing. Like, so if the GM is your boss, is the boss of the manager, if your boss tells you to do something, do you do it?
Yeah.
I mean, but I know it's not the same. It's a different dynamic, but it is just it's strange to me what you see in some of these situations.
Well, baseball has changed so much because the days of Bobby Cox and John Schultz having a cohesive relationship. I also think of Sparky Anderson and Bill LaJoy, who was the Detroit Tigers GM back in the 80s. The only bad thing a man ever did was trade John Smoltz, I think, for Dole Alexander.
Thank you very much.
Although, as he reminded me when I interviewed him one time, I got us a division, and that's what mattered at the time. So, but, you know, David, those days are gone.
He's like, hey, Smoltz wasn't a Hall of Famer when I traded him.
Yeah, boy, that was an interesting interview. He was not – I wanted to talk to him about the trade and also about the GM-manager relationship. And, boy, after a while, I had gone about two questions too long on that Smoltz trade, and I knew he was
tired of talking about that.
Oh, yeah, but, man, I tell you, that was – I learned a lesson right there to you know, feel the temperature in the room, so to speak, about an interview. But, you know, he turned out to be fine. But I learned a lot from his conversation because – he told me about how he and Sparky were, and he said, I never, as the general manager of the Detroit Tigers, went down to Sparky Anderson's clubhouse. That was Sparky Anderson's clubhouse.
Yeah.
He said every day about 2:30, 2 o'clock, whatever time, Sparky would get to the stadium, and he would come up to my office, and we would have a conversation about what happened in the minor leagues the night before, about injuries. He said we would have a cup of coffee and sit in my office and talk about what we needed to talk about. But it wasn't about what he did in the eighth inning last night to pull Willie Hernandez in that situation or something like that. And he said, you know, Schultz and Cox have that same relationship. Those days are gone. And the weird thing that I've never understood is I understand the analytical approach of changing baseball, but why did it get to a point where the general managers, especially at a young age, became so in control of everything that they would even have the thought of telling a manager of what to do with the lineup? You know, I don't hear. I mean, Greg McGeary doesn't tell Kirby Smart what to do. Thomas Dimitroff, I don't think, tells Dan Quinn how to coach, although he may need to sometime. I don't. General managers in the NFL and NBA don't tell their coaches how to coach.
Yeah.
But in baseball, David, that's changed.
It's weird.
I mean,
during the game, right?
Yeah.
That's just weird.
I know Frank Wren used to make Freddie Gonzalez have his cell phone on up until game time. I heard that from multiple people, and that his cell phone was on his body in case Frank called up until the first pitch, and then you're not supposed to. And that was even like, oh, give me a break. You know, give me a break. But, I mean, to hear that Brady Van What's-His-Face is calling down there, I mean, it's just – that's the circus and dumpster fire. And I think – here's the sad thing. I think, David, that general managers almost feel empowered to the point where they think they can get away and do that.
Oh, totally. It's bizarre. It really is. Bill, Always great, my man. And I'm glad to hear that you have a dog named Tommy John.
That's
cool.
Yeah. I got to go see what he was barking about out there. It must have been barking that Uncle David was calling him and he couldn't talk to him or something.
Love it. Thanks, Bill.
Hey, y'all have a great weekend.
All right, buddy. See you.
All right.
Bill Shanks. Love Bill Shanks.